The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hunt of a lifetime, changing lives one adventure at a time, empowering kids with courage. Join us in creating memories for kids facing life-threatening illnesses. We are here to make dreams come true. From magical outdoor escapades to heartwarming experiences, every moment is cherished. With every step of our young heroes, find a network of support, love, families, volunteers, and friends unite to uplift spirits and spread smiles. Amidst breathtaking landscapes, kids find strength they never knew they had. Together, we conquer challenges and celebrate victories. Be a part of the movement that transforms lives. Your contribution can bring courage and hope where it's needed most. Go to huntofalifetime.org to get involved. Let's create a world of cherished moments and unstoppable bravery. Brought to you in part by Maine Operation Game Thief, New Hampshire Wildlife Heritage Foundation, International Wildlife Crime Stoppers, and the North American Game Warden Museum. Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigations, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch. On this Warden's Watch, we're sitting down with Cole Letourneau, New Hampshire Fish and Game Conservation Officer. Thanks for joining Warden's Watch, Cole.
Thanks for having me, Wayne.
Yeah.
It's great.
Great. Absolutely. And it's great been hanging out with you at the Great American Outdoor Show, too.
Yeah, this is cool. This is like the coolest place.
Yeah, it's the coolest place.
Every outfitter you could think of, anything you could want for gear. I mean,
yeah. And you've been doing a good job of recruiting, grabbing guys that look, and girls, that look like they might be interested in a career in law enforcement in the outdoors.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, New Hampshire's hiring right now. I think most law enforcement's hiring across the U.S.
But, yeah.
You know, we've had some pretty decent candidates coming through, and it looks pretty good. You know, youth is...
New Hampshire's a pretty unique state that you can have coastal mountains, and you can get there drive time. I mean, 3 hours from my house to the coast, and you get to experience that coastal stuff and have some fresh seafood and be in the mountains hiking like it's out west.
You could do both in the same day. You could have a charter in the morning, getting stripers off our coast, and then go for a hike up in the whites after.
100%.
Not many places.
No, absolutely. And you're on the coast now.
I am on the coast now. I just transferred back in September.
Nice.
Yeah. Manchester was fun, but it was time to move on. I got into the job for the natural resource protection work. I think it's as most game wardens do. I didn't feel like I was getting to do as much of that as I wanted to. The coast offers not only, you know, deer season, but
probably the highest population of deer in the state of New Hampshire.
Oh yeah, for sure.
On that coastal region.
Sure, between Unit M and L, I mean, it's intense, but right now I'm doing the migratory species with the ducks. And the coastal enforcement with the stripers, tuna, all the federal regulations, the commercial guys. So it's a lot of resource protection work that I haven't been able to do with the past few years.
Yeah. Any particular one you're gravitating to that you're liking more than another?
No, I mean, it's all new to me. You know, I kind of had the wood stuff down from coming from the Manchester side. But now that I'm over there, I'm just trying to relearn this whole new world that is the ocean and the ocean enforcement and the commercial fisheries, which is super overwhelming. So,
right. Yeah.
Especially, I mean, we're all deputized with NOAA and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And not only am I in charge of doing the state waters, but we go past that 3-mile mark too and do the federal enforcement. So,
and that's where most of the commercial fishing occurs, is outside that three mile marker.
Yep.
So, and then a lot of landing in New Hampshire as far as fish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, all the draggers are doing out there outside the 3-mile mark. Lobstermen are going outside the 3-mile mark. It's a lot of fishing just got done coming in from federal waters and even recreational. All the tuna that's being taken in, that's all outside that. A lot of recreational guys are going out past that 3-mile mark. So it's important for us to be able to get out there, because not only is that resource important to New Hampshire, but it's important to our surrounding states and the rest of the U.S. too. We're all sharing that.
Yeah, 100%. And it seems like New Hampshire lands a lot of fish for, what do we have, like 13 miles of coast?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you break it down and you start looking at, you know, some of the back channels and stuff, it comes out to a little over 200. But
yeah,
I mean, as far as actual legitimate coastline, it's right around there.
So, yeah.
And for the three ports that we have between, you know, Hampton, Seabrook, Rye, and Portsmouth, it's a lot of landings going on.
So. Yeah, for sure. And you bring up a good point of all the inlets and how much coastal line is actually on that coast when you break it down. And the striper fishing, certainly when the stripers come in, all that is fishable.
All of it, yeah, every ounce of it. If you have a kayak, man, you can go through and you can fish some pretty cool spots.
Yeah, so, for sure.
And you're going to get away from those.
You don't have to have the big $100,000 boat.
No.
It, you can like paddle out there and have some fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great thing, right? Is, I mean, our state, as far as access goes, New Hampshire's got pretty decent access to waters and public lands and stuff. We're not hurting for that by any means. I mean, certainly it's getting smaller and smaller, and that is just, I think that's an unfortunate thing across the country, but New Hampshire's pretty good. You know, if you want to get away from people and get some back, you know, some access back somewhere else, and you could do that. If you don't mind getting onto a charter boat that's a party boat and going out with 20 other guys, you can do that.
Yeah.
All what you want.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You bring up something about the land, open land, and, you know, current use in New Hampshire keeps land open. And right now, nationwide access is a huge issue among hunting, fishing, sportsmen's access.
Yep.
So, and, you know, up north, we have a lot of big company, whether they were former paper companies, current paper companies, land, and if it's not posted, you can go there.
It's good to go, yeah. I mean,
and anywhere.
And there's not many states that are like that, especially around us. I know Massachusetts is pretty closed up. You know, you need permission for a lot of that.
Yeah.
New Hampshire, man, I mean, you can go, as long as you don't see a posted sign, you can go out through there. And that's what makes New Hampshire so great. And things are getting tough. I mean, we've got a lot of people, especially since COVID, they're moving north. They don't need to go into the work anymore. They can go through Zoom or do it, whatever, be remote. And unfortunately, that we're losing a lot of coasted lands. But I've also found, especially down my way, like a lot of landowners aren't necessarily against hunting. They just want to know who it is that's on that property.
Yep.
And that's, so for guys to go and be like, oh, there's nowhere to go anymore. Well, I mean, try talking to anyone, because like a lot of landowners just want to know who you are. That's all they care about. So,
want to tell you where to park and what you drive, so they know who's there.
Yeah,
it's understandable.
Yeah, absolutely,
for sure. And there's some new regulations this year with tree stands and trail cameras and stuff in New Hampshire. Yeah. Which, again, trail cameras are changing across the nation. We've already had some stuff going on in Arizona, and I'm trying to think of the other state that totally Is it Arizona that totally outlawed them?
I know. I think Arizona did, and I know there was another Western.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it Colorado, maybe?
It might have been. I don't want to say anything for certainty.
Speculation.
Yeah. But certainly trail cameras are becoming I don't know what trail cameras are becoming, because Fair Chase is involved with some of the description.
Fair Chase. I think a lot of landowners have started to kind of feel like their land is being just like under surveillance all the time, and it's like they don't feel like they can walk into the back 40 and just go for a walk without ending up on someone's trail camera and then ending up on, you know, a New Hampshire Facebook page being like, right, who's this guy walking through my hunting space? Like, no, it's my land guy. So
yeah,
there's definitely a lot.
That was very well explained.
there's a lot of contention about it. I mean, the good news is it's you can still use them in New Hampshire. If you're on private property, you just need to have the permission from someone.
Right.
And if it's your own property,
you're good to go.
Yeah, you're good to go.
Yeah.
You know, you can do what you want. So
and tree stands, the other thing, where you're putting names and addresses on them?
Yeah, we are. You need permission as well on private lands for things like ladder stands, permanent stands, stuff like that. That's not new for permanent stands. You've always needed to have permission, but now you need to get that written permission from the landowner. Things like my general understanding of it, it's still new and we're still all kind of learning it and working out through kind of the kinks, but I know talking to some other guys, it sounds like, you know, your saddle hunters are probably, they're fine.
Yeah.
They're not going to need to get that permission because it's not a permanent kind of a stance.
Yeah, they're going to take it with them.
Exactly. It's transient.
Right.
Which is kind of what, it kind of matches what current use was made for anyway. It's always been kind of a transient activities, kind of an open use. So it's not made for you to be able to go camping on someone's property.
Right, so. Or build this big, ginormous stand there. Yeah, for sure. So those are issues that are getting addressed nationwide, to be honest with you, that they're starting to come to a head, and it'll be interesting how that sugars off. But I think if I'm the landowner, I'm okay with that. I kind of want to know who's there.
And it sounds like, too, if landowners don't have a problem with it, it sounds like they can label it, say, hey, tree stands are allowed here. And that would be a covered use. It just needs to still have your name on it. But so it sounds like landowners are still giving that
especially for our large landowners too.
Yeah, especially you were talking about up north with the paper companies and stuff. Like if they would want guys to be able to still come out and do that, they can just post it.
Right.
Say, hey, yeah, use it.
Yeah.
So
because I know that was one of their big problems. They didn't want people to keep coming to bother them and ask permission.
Right.
So they would do curb length stuff. So hey, this is what you can do on our land.
Yep.
You know, recovering an animal with an ATV was a big thing. Yeah, if you shoot a deer, you shoot a moose, you shoot a bear, you can take your ATV and get it in and get it out. But that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
But that's understandable. We're good with that. So don't keep coming to ask us.
Yeah. I can't blame them.
Yeah, no, they got work to do, and that does take time out of it.
Yep.
So we tell people, hunters, to interact with those landowners. But some of those landowners, whether they're farmers, that's their primary job, that takes some time out of their day. And
it does.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
They're busy people. So.
Absolutely. I have a friend that's a farmer, and he doesn't really care to talk to hunters because of that.
Right.
He's got a lot of stuff to do, and come September, there's all kinds of people knocking on his door looking for him, and he's like,
I don't have time.
So he assigns his good hunting buddy friend that hunts there. He goes, go see him. So he runs the property for hunting.
Yeah. Absolutely. I got a similar thing. It's a couple of properties that I hunt. You know, this guy's a farmer or whatever. He's like, go talk to my son.
Yeah.
I can't talk to it.
No.
That's fine.
And understandable for sure. But so you had an epic case when you were a trainee, and let's talk about that, because most trainees don't.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Don't come into such a case. As a matter of fact, most seasoned game wardens don't come into cases like this, Cole.
Yeah, no, and I was actually off my trainee period. I think I hadn't even been a year yet. I kind of stumbled into it, but I'll give you kind of a quick general synopsis of it, because it gets kind of lengthy if I get into some of the details. But so kind of started off, the guy's down, he's a successful hunter, down at the check station registering his deer.
Mm-hmm.
Notices that two guys in front of him got real nervous when a green pickup truck drove around the circle in Manchester. And he was observant enough to realize, hey, I should probably let someone know, because that's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
So he called us, and the only thing that I had was I knew who the person was I called and what time he registered his deer. And so I was able to go back to the check station, find the registrations for the deer that were registered in front of him, and I started trying to contact those two guys. Mm-hmm. And I tried for over a week. Me and another officer tried calling them, going to their house, knocking on the door. And we're like, I talked to the guy's roommate, like everything. And I could not get in contact with them.
Right.
And then suddenly, I'm out on patrol one day, just driving through, and I get a phone call on my work phone. And I answer, and the guy goes, this is the game work? I'm like, well, I'm one of them, yeah. And he goes, well, I got to tell you what I did. And I go, all right, man, like, you lay it on me. Like, I'm sure it's not that big of a deal. We can work through it. And he goes, well, I killed 7 deer. And I'm like, all right, that's substantial. He's like, no, you don't understand. I killed 7 deer all at once. And I'm like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, what do you say to that?
Yeah, he's like, I'm like, well, where are you now? He's like, well, I'm hunting in New York, and I'm coming back tomorrow. I'm like, well, why don't we just sit down and chat tomorrow, and we can kind of figure out what's going on. I'm like, can you at least tell me, like, where this all happened so that, you know, I can just go verify some stuff. And he tells me it's a small chunk of this tiny little postage stamp piece of woods in the middle of Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And I go out there, and Wayne, it just snowed when this happened. And the entire piece of woods was just blood red. You know, I think most game wardens in the north know what it looks like to walk up on like a kill site and some drag marks coming out of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many drag marks, I couldn't figure out which one connected to which gut pile.
Wow.
And it was amazing to look at. But so I talked to the guy. He gives a full confession. Kind of. So he provides me that the night he came and talked to me, he provided me with a couple of bins worth of deer meat and says, this is the deer meat from those deer that I took. These are a couple of the heads from those deer. The rest of them have been disposed of. I don't know what happened to it. Okay, understandable. Coyotes grab them, like, whatever. I start digging in a little bit further, me and Officer Rob McDermott, and we start figuring out that there were some phone calls made that day, and some of those deer that he had shot were registered by some other people. And then, when I go back to him and I talk to him about that, I come to find out that those bins of deer meat he gave me actually came from New York, and deer that he had harvested in New York the day that I had spoken to him on the phone. So to try to kind of wrap this big mess up into a nice neat little ball for you. Essentially, him and 4 of his buddies, one of them being his son, go out and do essentially what is a deer drive on this tiny little postage stamp piece. It's a kind of a square piece of land, and they come in from it on each corner and kind of push the deer into the middle. Well, what he tells me is that he sees a deer pretty much immediately as he comes off work, shoots that deer. A bunch of other deer stand up, run. He hears his buddy shoot, think, they just shot the deer I just shot. They come running back over to him. He shoots again, and by the end of it, he's got 7 deer laid up in front of him. He calls him. He tries to get his other buddies to register that were with him shooting. They wouldn't do it. He calls some other friends. This guy comes back numerous times and collects a couple of other deer, brings them back to his house, chops them up after he registers them for him. All in all, 7 deer, all those were recovered. And I think I sent you a photo of the spread that I had. It's pretty impressive.
It is impressive.
There was a couple of deer heads that we never located. to kind of jump back a little bit, the interesting kind of story of how we figured out who it was that registered those deer for him. So, because he didn't want to tell me, he wanted to protect his buddy. Rob McDermott got a call for a dumped deer leg on the side of the road. How many times did you get that phone call when you were warden? And how many times did you go and like actually follow up with that call? I mean, you do the best you can.
You do the best you can.
You can't always do it.
And the more deer you have, the more of those calls you get. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, we were inundated with that in District 5.
Yeah.
Rob goes to that call, picks that deer leg up, and it has a registration seal attached to it.
What are the odds of that?
What are the odds of that?
Yeah.
So that's how we end up on that guy. And all in all, there were just the guy who killed those deer. He ended up with over 20 charges, a couple $1,000 worth of fines, lost his license for 2 years. The other guy who registered those deer also received fines, lost his license for a year. So that was... I'm not going to beat that.
No.
More than likely, I'm not going to beat that case.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, but maybe.
Maybe. I always leave that. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Anything's possible.
Anything is possible, but that's a...
That case, if I ever end up as an FTL, I mean, that case was made just because Rob and I were hard-nosed and pressed and pressed and pressed until something happened.
Yes.
You know, giving up on something, after a couple of tries attempts to contact someone, sometimes it takes a little bit to pressure someone into making a phone call, man. Like, I'm sick of the game warden being on my door.
And I always thought of it as a challenge where they're trying to avoid you. I'm trying to catch them. So, yeah. And you do all that things. I mean, we've showed up at people's work after a while.
Right.
Because we know that they know that we're trying to reach out to them. And now they're avoiding us. And, okay, we're going to up this ante a little more. So, yeah. But you're right. I mean, that's... And you know what? Cole, even in my personal life, when people are avoiding me when I call, I'm like, it just makes me want to contact them more. And how
the squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Yeah,
I've always been told.
Yeah, and me just going around, of course, being a game warden in New Hampshire, I just show up at the door, and that's hard to do when you're trying to reach somebody, in California or something, and they don't want to pick up their phone, or they're not returning your calls, and I want to go to their house and knock on their door.
Yep, absolutely. The nice thing for us, I guess, is at least we have the Lacey Act in the game warden world. You don't have that when you're trying
to
just...
We have a very long reach. Yeah, so much. When something's happened in New Hampshire, I reached out to Kentucky once to do a knock and talk. And it's a long, long arm. And people realize, hey, it doesn't matter where you hunt, all of a sudden the local game warden's pounding on your door about something that happened in New Hampshire or other places. It's that game warden connection. And, you can't hide. You can't run.
No,
we're going to find you.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if it was just as easy as me going and knocking on a door and being like, "Hey, man, like, what happened?" Like, job would be as much fun,
right?
But
yeah, no, very cool, very cool. Well, thanks for giving us a whole insight of your beginning and and now you're kind of recruiting too, aren't you? You've done some really good jobs down here.
Yeah, no, I mean it's fun. I don't mind getting out. When I was first trying to get into law enforcement, I was lucky to have just my local officer who was willing to kind of take me under his wing, bring me on ride-alongs and do stuff like that. I hope that I can do that for someone else. I hope that I can go out there, if someone wants to do this job bad enough. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of help.
Done some other jobs in law enforcement before you got here, which kind of, carted you this way, right?
Yeah. So I went to college up in Unity, Maine. Studied conservation law enforcement. But while I was there, at the end of my freshman year, I became a correctional officer in Augusta, Maine. I did that for a year and a half until I got an internship with my local PD.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked for York, Maine as a observe officer. I worked for Henniker, New Hampshire Police as a full-time patrolman. So I've kind of gotten to go through and see a lot of different sides of this job, law enforcement.
And corrections as well, right? You did a little time in corrections?
Yeah, a year and a half up in Augusta.
Yeah, that's tough work there.
You couldn't pay me to go back, especially now that I'm a game warden, not a chance. But
talk about two extreme ends: working outside and then working in a prison.
Yeah.
So
correctional officers, man, they deserve a real hard handshake if they can get through a career like that. It takes a special person. So,
They deserve that for sure. Yeah, because they're in jail as much as the other people are.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, you're looking
for sure.
So, but yeah, no, it's cool being able to share all those experiences that I've had. And no one's path into this job is the same.
No, I would agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, so for
me. I did the National Park Service thing.
Yeah.
So, and then I was U.S. Fish and Wildlife and got into this job. And you went corrections, local PD.
Right.
In two different states, too, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, and it's, so being able to share those experiences with people who are, like, kind of looking to get into it, you can just give them different ideas of, like, hey, you know what? Yeah, maybe right now you're not ready, but these are things you can do, and as long as this is your dream, you can get here.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes it takes people different paths.
Persistence.
Exactly.
You know, just like trying to catch
your poachers.
Your poachers.
Exactly.
If you're persistent in getting this job, you're going to persist in catching poachers, and you are the person we want in this job.
Exactly. You know what? Maybe if you can't come work for New Hampshire Fishing Game, we can help you get in with somewhere else.
Yeah. You know, Maine, Pennsylvania's hiring. It seems like a lot of people are out there looking for good, solid employees.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, hey, thanks a lot, Cole, for sitting down and giving a little chat about your experiences as a game warden.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you having me, Wayne. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other game wardens on our adventures protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experience of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.